yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a screaming now. Greetings, 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, let's revisit the subject. Global trade war, Trump, China, steel, tariffs, South Korea, etc. What's going on? Is this a trade war? What's the real objective here? Well, maybe there are many objectives. Well, let's look at the events of the past week and then put it in a broader context over the past year. And then even a broader historical context, because this trade war is not something new. Periodically, the U.S. engages in these kind of activities when it feels its longer-term interests are being challenged, or it repositions itself for a slowing global economy to protect U.S. interests at the expense of others, even allies. This is not new. What Trump is doing has been done before by Reagan, 1985, when he went after Japan. And before that, by Nixon in 1971, where he went after Europe. Well, you're going to have to understand these historical past events here to understand what Trump is doing. And Trump isn't acting on his own. Don't make that mistake. You know, this is a policy objective, an aggressive offensive on trade by a significant sector of the U.S. capitalist class. Not the traditional elite that wanted to keep it the way it was, NAFTA and TPP and all that other stuff. This is another reflection of splits in the capitalist class in the U.S., and I'll explain why. Okay, let's put this in perspective. Well, the latest news is that earlier this week, Trump imposed, well, not this week, I think it was even before that, he imposed a list of 1,300 China goods coming into the U.S. that he was slapping a tariff on. It amounted to $50 billion in tariffs. Well, first thing you should know is this was just an announcement. This was not something that immediately happened. Well, what's going to happen? Well, you know, if you read even the announcement from the Office of U.S. Trade, this list of 1,300 tariffs is just the beginning of a process. It's going to take until May 15th for commentary on these tariffs from U.S. businesses, and then another week for the Trade Office to digest that, or more than a week probably, and then they're going to have to put together some compromise, and then you will see an announcement of what the tariffs are going to be, and then it'll take a certain amount of time to implement it administratively. So you're looking at 60 to 90 days at a minimum. And you know, when Trump announced these tariffs quickly, you know, what happened was the stock markets panicked. Oh, trade war, trade war. And the media started hyping trade war, trade war. And the stock markets went in a dive. You know, big companies like Boeing and so forth and Archer Daniel Midland's and Caterpillar might be affected by countermeasures from China, which, as we'll see, they have been. But it's not a trade war yet. They're all maneuvering. They're maneuvering, both sides. you've got to understand that there's really a dual track going on here in U.S. trade policy. On the one hand, the U.S. is acting aggressively and tough in relationship to China. On the other hand, it's going pretty slow and cautiously and timidly with respect to the rest of the U.S. trading partners. Well, look at the Korea deal. The Korea deal was a softball deal for Korea. I mean, Koreans couldn't even believe it. You know, Korea is the second largest steel importer to the U.S., but what did the U.S. do in this quickly negotiated deal with South Korea trade here a week or so ago? Well, exempted Korea from all steel imports permanently. Well, that doesn't sound like an aggressive tariff policy with regard to steel and aluminum tariffs that Trump had announced previously. No, no. And by the way, you know, what did Trump do? He exempted just about everybody else from steel tariffs. You know, they're the big importers. Mexico, Canada, Brazil, Europe. It's all on hold. But a South Korea deal is the template for what's coming with regard to those specific tariffs with allies. Then it'll be a big softball. Well, okay, so why is he doing this softball thing? Because it's getting traction for him and his political base. His ratings are way up, over 50%. They were really down pretty low there, lowest of any president at this point, but whoa, they got way up. And he's, if you notice, he's going around the heartland there, the Midwest, Great Lakes states, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere, and he's on the campaign trail talking up the tariffs. And even if these tariffs get shelved temporarily on the side or permanently in case of Korea, it still has the political effect with his base. Oh, he's doing something. Oh, isn't that exactly what he did during the 2016 elections? Ran around to those states promising to do something about trade and the loss of jobs, right? He's repeating, he's resurrecting that whole policy in a midterm election year coming up. And it's having an effect, right? Even though he goes soft on the tariffs with the allies and so forth, it's still catching a lot of positive results for him politically. So you bet he's going to do it more. All right, China is different, though. China is the hardball trade objective here. Yeah, he's not going so softball with China. But again, we're still at the beginning of this. They're still maneuvering both sides. You know, he imposed this list of 1,333 items that will be hit with a 25% tariff. Well, first of all, when you see it's a across-the-board tariff, it's just a negotiating tactic, right? It's $50 billion, 25%. Well, you know, long list of industrial, business-to-business goods imports from China are in that list of 1,300. What? Chemicals, industrial goods, machinery, helicopters. Yeah, we import helicopters from China. Satellites, yeah, satellite equipment from China. Machine tools of all kinds. Nuclear equipment from China. I don't know what that is, but look at the list. The list is published by the U.S. Office of Trade representative, Mr. Lighthizer. They're all there, the 1,300. You can go read them. Where would you go to read them? Oh, just go to the document that was produced by the Office of Trade representation. Yeah, on March 22nd, that was produced. And go to docket USTR-2018-0005, entitled China's Acts, Policies and Practices Related to Technology Transfer, Intellectual Property, and Innovation. That's the report that was released on March 22nd with the $1,300 tariffs, $50 billion, which Trump turned around immediately and signed, setting off launching the trade war with China. So you got this this dual track going on, this softball approach to trade to get some token adjustments from Korea, and you'll see the same from Europe and NAFTA, token. Ah, but Trump will go and say, oh, big deal. Look at the big things I won for you. He'll hype it and lie about it to his base, and they'll believe him. But that track, that soft track, will not have achieved very much. Mark my words. Now, China, the hard track, is different. That's where he's playing hardball, just as Reagan did with Japan in 85 and Nixon did with Europe in 71. You see, the U.S. periodically engages in these aggressive trade offensives to rewrite the rules of the trade game in its favor of U.S. corporations. You know, part of this whole trade offensive by Trump is to rewrite the WTO, the World Trade Organization, rules to make them more favorable to the U.S. because other countries now are using those rules to complain about U.S. trade practices. You know, imposing tariffs on U.S. has been on a whole number of goods. So the U.S. violates the WTO, and the others are using it against the U.S., so the U.S. wants to change the terms of the trade and the WTO. You know, this is a across the board, let's change these rules. And the U.S. does this periodically to ensure its dominance in the global trade. By the way, that global trade has been slowing. The growth has been slowing in the last several years. So the writing is on the wall. You know, the global economic trade pie is not growing as much as it used to, and it's growing slower all the time in the long run. You know, there are aberrations here, you know, a little recovery here and there, but in the long run, it's slowing down. Well, the pie is going to get smaller. The U.S. wants to make sure it contains and obtains its share of the pie and let the others take it in the ear if the pie shrinks, you see. They're all maneuvering. All the capitalist sectors globally are maneuvering to ensure their share of the trade pie. You know, if Europe is even more important, that trade export pie, especially Germany, Japan, the same thing, Korea, etc. Well, the U.S. is maneuvering now. And, of course, so has been China. You know, they're like a bunch of boxers in a ring circling each other looking for a soft spot, right? And the U.S. is the gorilla in the ring. And it says, I'm changing the rules. Well, that happened before in 85, 71. We'll talk about that shortly. But the point is, there's a dual track strategy going on here with regard to trade. Softball, soft targeting, and go soft token adjustments for U.S. trade allies, and hardball with the Chinese. You know, back to this U.S. Trade Office report released on March 22nd. The recommendation of that report was the 1,300 tariffs. And they even identified all the different goods, you know, that they wanted to have tariffs on, the 1,300, chemicals, jet parts, industrial equipment, aircraft parts, medical equipment, trucks, motorcycles, consumer electronics stands out as the only really consumer good. Most of this is business goods, right? Even artillery, guns and rifles. Somehow we import artillery, guns and rifles from China. Can you believe that? Well, these were all targeted. And that was the launch, the public launch of the trade war. But the preparation for identifying China as the hard target began over a year ago. This has been in the works. This is not the result of a 3 a.m. tweet by Trump from the White House, second floor. No, 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 no. This is being planned, has been planned, which means it's not just Trump. And this is certain business interests in the U.S., you know, that want to do this. Well, who are these business interests, right? Well, you know, it's certainly not Boeing or Archer Daniel Midland's, the agribusiness company, right? Or Caterpillar, the agricultural implement company. They're running around scared because China responded to Trump's initial list with a list of tariffs of its own. They went kind of softball and said we should resolve these things through the WTO, China did, because China thought, well, okay, we'll renegotiate some of this stuff. We'll sit down with the U.S. We can out-negotiate them. But, you know, the imposition of those counter-tariffs by China kind of upset companies like Boeing and Caterpillar and Archer Daniels Midland. Because they targeted, China's targeted, you know, the most sensitive political, economic, base of Trump. You know, when you go after ADM and you target soybeans, for example, and I think U.S. trade exports to China, you know, like $130 billion a year. And I think, you know, soybeans are like 12, 15 billion of that. So soybeans are a big chunk. Where are soybeans grown? Illinois, Missouri, mostly, and throughout, to a lesser extent, throughout the Midwest. All right, well, that's Trump country. That's red states, at least downstate Illinois, right? And that's the target. Well, that's got ADM upset. And they're lobbying the administration hard as they can. And the same thing with Boeing, because on the list are aircraft, U.S. aircraft. Boeing has humongous big orders to sell planes, commercial planes, jets to China. Well, they're trying to get the administration's attention and meetings going on behind the scenes with Boeing and the administration, you know, to a Caterpillar, the same thing. So what China's saying, tit for tat, guys, you know, you want to hit $50 billion? Yeah, well, but China initially only said $3 billion, you see, $3 billion in goods. It was a signal to Trump, okay, you know, let's sit down and negotiate, right? And it's interesting to see Trump administration types quickly counter what Trump says. Trump comes out and makes these bombast, hyperbolic declarations in his tweets and so forth, right, to get the attention of the media, who then transmits to his political base in the U.S., see what he's doing, oh, really radical stuff. They love it. Even if he doesn't follow through on it, they think he's doing it, you see. And the media plays right into the hands of Trump, you know, the traditional mainstream media in the United States, and he plays them. He played them throughout the whole election cycle. He's still playing them, and they're still falling for it. So, you know, he gets the attention of them, and he also gets the attention of those countries he's going to negotiate with, because, you know, they read the media too, and they say, oh, this guy's crazy. Gets them to the bargaining table anyway, right? That's what Trump's strategy is, you know, be a little crazy, get him to the bargaining table. It comes natural for Trump, because maybe he is. Certainly, sociopathic kind of crazy, right? Megalomaniac kind of crazy. I really think so. You know, away from his psychology state of mind, you know, psychopaths, sociopaths, are very brilliant people. They're very clever, very smart. People don't understand that, right? And Trump is very clever, very smart. It doesn't mean he's not crazy as well. Anyway, let's talk about the policy, not the psychology. But that's part of the picture, you see. You can't separate the personality from the policy totally here. Okay, so Trump comes out with the bombast statements. And gets the attention of his opponent, but it causes a lot of mess in regular government and economic circles in the U.S. You know, the stock market collapses here, 700-800 points, and you know, the certain companies get it all pushed out of shape, and et cetera. And but immediately, guys like Kudlow, his new chair of government economic council, you know, Larry Kudlow, you know, the Fox News, I think it was Fox News commentator, who now chairs the economic council. Whoa. It's strange. And then Mnuchin, who's the ex-Goldman Sachser there at the Treasury, they both come out and say, well, no, don't get excited. This is not a trade war. Hmm? And what happens? Oh, the stock market goes back up. Oh, okay. The smarter heads are in control over there, right? And then Trump comes out and says something else, and whoa, who knows who's running the government? Well, it's a strange government being run by, you know, the traditional elites to some extent, and then Trump as well. It's a strange tug of war between the two. But on this trade issue, there's no tug of war, you see, because they want certain concessions from China. And Trump wants some big win with China to go back to his political base. You cannot separate these trade wars and negotiations from domestic politics in the U.S. Well, in what sense? Well, Trump is playing his nationalist card here in an election year. You know, before he came out with the steel tariffs, a day or two before, I think it was, there was a big meeting in Washington by the American First Group. Who were they? Oh, this is this coalition of radical rightists, right-wingers, some business interests, and, you know, a lot of just crazy right-wingers and so forth. And they had their conference in Washington, and Trump went to speak at it because that's part of his base, you see. And they agreed to raise $100 million for his reelection. And a day later, Trump comes out with the steel tariffs. You think there's a coincidence here? No. There's a whole strategy of using the trade nationalist theme, once again, as during the election, as a political strategy. And by all polls being taken in the last month, especially in the red state heartland, it's working. They think he's really going to do something. And they're really even willing to take some heat in lost business to do it. You know, the folks in the Great Lakes industrial area and in the red states and so forth, you know, were really harmed by all this free trade BS of the Clintons, Reagan before, and Clintons and Obamas. And, you know, they remember it. And they still, you know, are chafing at the effects of it. So someone comes along and says, now I'm really going to do it. I promised during the election, but now I'm really going to do it. I'm doing it. See, it hits an appeal with them. So you can't separate out this trade offensive from domestic politics this year, not just electoral politics, but, you know, clearly Trump is running for 2020 already. He's on campaign mode. He's going around giving speeches. He's agitating and mobilizing his base already behind this whole theme of nationalism and trade war, using the trade policy as a lever for his nationalist appeal. And it's working. It's working. Now, there's another thing, a little more far-fetched, the motivation for this trade war. It's domestic politics as well, but I think it's there lurking in the background. And that is, Trump's going to fire Mueller, no doubt about it. He may fire him right before the November elections or right after. Well, he knows that's going to generate a firestorm, right? Yes, it will. And he's agitating, mobilizing his base in preparation for that, for a big pushback. When the traditional elites get all pushed out of shape when he fires Mueller and come after him, well, his base will be mobilized and he'll come right back. This guy's a street fighter. He's not going to sit back and take it like wimpy Bill Clinton, right? When they tried to impeach him, what did he do? He turned around and gave them everything they want. Don't impeach me. Don't impeach me. You can have whatever you want. You can have a war in the Balkans, right? You can have your tax cuts, right? You can have your financial bank deregulation. You can open up. You can have more free trade, et cetera, right? In his last 2 years, he gave them everything they wanted. Everything the Republicans and business wanted, he gave to them. Just to stay in office. Well, this guy isn't going to respond that way. He's cut from a different cloth than Clinton. And he's going to fight back. And I believe he's mobilizing his base on this nationalist issue, this trade issue, in preparation to push back on the heat that comes when he fires Mueller. Anyway, well, you know, that's kind of hard to prove and everything, but that's just my theory. What's not so hard to prove is that, you know, this is part of 2018 and even 2020 elections, and it's boosting his ratings. So it means he's going to really do it even more. He's going to keep this trade thing simmering all the way up to the November elections. You're going to see this is just the beginning. Well, you know, China pushed back here on the initial list of 50 billion and 50. It did so tokenly, carefully at first. But then Trump went and got even tougher, said he wanted even more, even before they sat down to negotiate. And China responded in kind. In other words, China obviously realized that going soft wasn't going to achieve anything. And, you know, China responded with a 50 billion list of its own tariffs on the U.S. Well, that got the attention. 50-50, right? Let's go do this thing. This is 50-50, right? Well, what did Trump do? He just recently tweeted, oh, I want another $100 billion of tariffs. Another $100 billion on top of the $50 billion. Well, you know, he's ratcheting up. You can just see him sitting there, you know, on the second floor of the White House there at 3 a.m. in the morning saying, what, those SOBs, you know, how dare they? Well, let's slap him with another $100 billion. So Kudlow and others are scurrying around here yesterday and today to try to contain that firestorm. So it looks like they're drifting towards China and U.S., although drifting toward trade war, but it's still too early because it's all talk, you see. This is all talk and has nothing to do with actual implementation yet. And we're looking at 3 months before anything even begins to be implemented. Now, a while ago, I said that this whole thing was being cooked a year ago. It's not just the consequence of Trump's shooting off his mouth, shooting from the hip, right, in a tweet. No, no. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, last August 2017, the Trump administration, I don't know if it was Trump himself or whomever, gave the Office of U.S. Trade a task. And that task was to identify technology transfer abuses by China and to undertake an investigation. And there were four objectives, all related to China and technology transfer. Now, that was laid out in writing, what the Office of Trade was supposed to do. And the findings came back in March 22nd, where that actual document written in August was filled in with the findings. In other words, they knew what they were going to find before they actually did the report. And this is what was announced by the Office of Trade Representative on March 22nd. This is what identified the 1,300 products, $50 billion recommendation, 25% tariffs, right? This was cooked at least last August. Well, why didn't they come out with it in August or sooner? Well, that's because the number one priority then was the tax cuts, you see. And they had to get that put to bed before they raised another bombshell issue here of trade. Well, that was signed off in January. And of course, ever since then, the focus, the shift has been to trade policy as primary, hasn't it? Well, you know, go back to my writings in November of 2016, right after the election, where I predicted that the two major objectives of the new Republican administration and Congress were first tax cuts, second trade. Everything else was secondary. They could live with not achieving anything else, but if they achieved those two things, then they got what they wanted out of this administration. And they wouldn't do anything. No one would try to get rid of Trump until those two things were achieved. Well, they got one in the bag, didn't they? The $5 trillion investor business tax cuts. Yeah, $5 trillion, as I've said before. You know, just look at it. Joint Committee on Taxation and the CBO. It's $5 trillion in tax cuts for them, offset by $2 trillion increases in taxes on the middle class, leaving a net of $3 trillion. That they reduce by half by assuming ridiculous economic growth and tax revenue collection. That's how they get their $1.5 trillion. I said this before, but it's worth saying again, because people don't realize, and you're not going to find it in the media. That's for darn sure. But really, it's $5 trillion tax cuts for them and $2 trillion tax hikes for us. And then the other $1.5 trillion, the excess budget they're going to take out of Social Security, Medicare, food stamps, education, and so forth. You know, that's where that criminal Paul Ryan is heading right now, right? That's on the agenda here too. Okay, so now it's trade. Now it's trade. But this thing was cooked a year ago, was in the process, and then held off because they wanted to push the tax cuts through, which they did. Now, in 2018, with that in a bag, here they go. Big trade offensive. But as I said, it's a dual-track trade offensive. They're going to go soft on U.S. allies. And the objective here is to get some token adjustments to NAFTA and Europe trade and so forth that Trump can then go back, hype, exaggerate to his base for political purposes, for elections, and to mobilize them again when he fires Mueller, okay? Those two domestic objectives are here behind the scenes. And we have the dual-track trade policy. Go slow on allies. I mean, look at the Korean template that they just negotiated. South Korea got off free, you know? Second largest steel importer to the U.S. Now they can import permanently, no tariffs, permanently, no other tariffs imposed on South Korea on anything else. And of course, you know, they import to the U.S. all kinds of stuff. Just some limited quotas on Korean trucks. They don't want Korean trucks imported to the U.S. because the Koreans have already grabbed a big piece of the auto market in the U.S., you know, with Kia and Hyundai and so forth, and U.S. auto companies, the only thing that's turning a profit for them are truck sales, so they don't want these cheap, Korean truck sales coming into the U.S. They don't want that. But that's all there was. That's all there was. Oh, and the U.S. gets better access to Korea to sell its cars. That's all there was to that Korean deal. What a softball. What a big nothing. trade negotiation. That was. Well, I predict NAFTA is going to be very much the same. Very much the same. And then, of course, when the U.S. engages with Europe, it'll be very much the same. Because the U.S. wants Europe to play hardball through NATO against Russia. You see, that's more important to them. And, of course, trade is extremely important to Europe. Exports. Most of, Germany's GDP is from exports. And Germany will do whatever they need to maintain those exports. They'll trade off, whatever the U.S. wants with regard to NATO here. So, that's the strategy over there. As far as Canada and Mexico is concerned, there's not going to be any major changes, radical changes to NAFTA. There'll be some token stuff, and he'll say, well, look at the big deal I got, which won't be a big deal. That's the one track. But the other track is hardball with China. But is it about China goods imports to the U.S.? Well, there's a big deficit there, no doubt. No doubt. The U.S., has a big trade deficit with China on goods. But, how much of that trade deficit of goods coming from China are actually U.S. companies shipping their stuff back to the U.S.? I don't know. I'd like to see some of that numbers there, but you'll never see that, U.S. companies or joint ventures between U.S. and Chinese companies shipping the stuff back to the U.S. I'll bet there's a lot there. Anyway, I don't think it's about the trade goods deficit with China. I think what's going on is the U.S., Trump and the U.S., are really targeting technology transfer with China. I think they've gotten to a point where they're really getting worried that China is able to extract technology information from U.S. corporations in China, especially some very sensitive, high-tech, next-generation technology. China issues about as many patents on technology as the U.S. does. Two largest by far patent issuancers in the global economy. I think Germany is third, they're far behind, right? The others aren't even in the game. Right? The whole new technology revolution's going on. What is it that the U.S. is worried about as far as technology transfer? Well, they say intellectual property, but part of intellectual property is software. And what is the software they are most worried about, the U.S., that they think the Chinese are extracting from U.S. corporations in China as a condition of doing business in China, right? Or that China's trying to get by buying U.S. companies. There's evidence now that China's trying to buy up some strategic U.S. companies, and the administration and Congress are putting the nicks to it, because they know what's going on. So China's trying to get technology transfer by buying into or buying up U.S. companies, and at the same time by requiring U.S. companies in China as a condition of doing business to share technology. Well, what are the technologies, the next-gen technologies that are so critical militarily? Well, artificial intelligence. There's a big war going on. Who's going to capture artificial intelligence, which is software? Another war is G5, wireless communications, next generation wireless. Who's going to dominate that? And there are other cybersecurity technologies as well. If you look at the trade report by the Office of Trade, it's all about Chinese technology transfer issues. In fact, even the title, quote, China's acts, policies, and practices related to technology transfer, intellectual property, and innovation. That's what this investigation by the Office of Trade was about last August, and that's what its report that precipitated these tariffs, the initial $50 billion tariffs, are about as well. Read it. Go to the docket and read it. It's all about China's manipulation of U.S. technology. That's what the U.S. wants. That's what Trump wants. I believe that Trump will trade technology transfer gains or limits on Chinese technology transfer for allowing China to continue most of its goods exports to the U.S. If there's going to be a deal between the two, I believe there will be. It's going to be that quid pro quo. Oh, there will be some limits on for public consumption on goods imports to the U.S. But they're not going to, Trump is not going to, and China is not going to in any way interfere with ADM and Boeing and Caterpillar. They'll be exempt. There'll be something there in any agreement. But there won't be an agreement, I believe, till the election, because this is too good an issue for the U.S. to keep the fires stoked on. And they're going to do that. Pump up this trade thing, you see. So there'll be some token limits on Chinese imports to the U.S. But what the U.S. really wants is an agreement on technology transfer and, quote, intellectual property, which is a code word for that. That's what it wants. That's what it will trade for. Now, why that all of a sudden? Well, because, as I said, it's militarily sensitive new technology. And there's some sectors or interest in the Trump administration that's really getting worried about China militarily next generation technology. I suspect that some of these generals in Trump's general heavy administration are representing the defense industry, U.S. defense industry, you know, the Lockheeds and so forth, right? And they're behind this initiative to focus on technology transfer. They're behind it. You know, you can't separate out either the domestic attack on the tech companies that is building now, right? Going after Facebook, right? Going after some other companies there in the U.S., not just, you know, Facebook, Twitter, so forth, right? They're worried that these tech companies are too independent. Besides, the tech companies in California, Silicon Valley are, you know, all big Democratic Party campaign contributors, right? That's why Trump is going after them, right? Amazon, he's part of the whole deal, right? He's part of this new tech stuff. He also owns the Washington Post, which hasn't been very, Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, which hasn't been very friendly to Trump, right? So Trump is going, he's using the office of the president to go after his opponents, both in the tech industry, you know, to tame the tech industry. You know, we're going to get Zuckerberg here and we're going to grill him in front of Congress and put the fear of God in the rest of these tech leaders, right? Already you can see some of them beginning to turn, right? You got this guy Cook of Apple coming out and criticizing Zuckerberg, right? And splits already within the tech community. They're going to grill him and put the fear of God in the other CEOs in the tech industry and maybe get them to move some of their campaign money to Trump and the Republicans. Yeah, that's what they're going to do here. So there's a domestic offensive against tech here, and they're very vulnerable for certain issues. And I don't think you can separate that from, the tech offensive and technology transfer in the trade negotiations. It's like a dual front going on. Okay, so watch that. Watch that domestic front and the trade front as far as tech is concerned. The focus is tech. And a certain segment of the U.S. capitalist class, probably that defense industry, is worried that we got this technology transfer on next generation technology, AI, G5, and so forth, that we've got to stop somehow. Maybe Mattis and the others at the Pentagon there, you know, and representatives for the big military equipment guys, you know, especially, you know, the aircraft and the Lockheeds and the Raytheons and all the rest. Okay, so technology transfer is the target. A secondary target, I think, is for the U.S. is opening up China for the big banks, U.S. banks. You know, the U.S. has been knocking on the door in its annual meetings with Beijing to open up your financial system, open up. Right. That's, you know, to allow the U.S. banks and shadow banks to get a deeper foothold in China, because there's a lot of money to be made there financially. And China is trying to maintain domestic control over its financial system and opening to the global economy very slowly and carefully, because they got a problem with the new financial elite domestically destabilizing their economy and their financial system as well. But they don't want to let the big banks in there because they will compete with the government banks in China. The U.S. wants in. That's a secondary thing. First thing is technology transfer. Second is open the markets to banks and financial interests. Third down the line is stop the flow of these 1,300 type industry goods into the U.S. That's the third most important, I think. And I believe if they come to an agreement at some point with China, I believe that Trump will trade off going hard on the goods imports to the U.S. You know, just get some token thing there. He can trump it and go hard on the technology transfer issue. I think that's what's going to happen here. That's the hardball track of Trump trade policy. The softball is, as I said, you know, basically go slow and go soft. Both hard and soft templates, you know, will serve his interest of, see what I did. You know, I did what I promised I would do during the election here. I got these dastardly foreigners in shape and in line. I slapped them in line here on the trade thing. Okay. Well, we'll see how that turns out. Most recently, of course, it appears to be heating up a little bit. The Chinese are not going to be so easy, you know, to force into an agreement. It's not going to be as easy as it was with Japan in 85 and Reagan. Well, what did Reagan do? Well, the Japanese at the time were eating the U.S. Lunch here on competition and with exports and imports. We were running a huge trade deficit with Japan as well in 1985. Well, why was that? Well, that was because the dollar was so high and was making U.S. Goods uncompetitive to Japan. And well, why was the dollar so high? Well, because U.S. interest rates were obsessively high, and that drove up the dollar. Well, in other words, the problem in the trade, a relative trade relationship with Japan, was the U.S.'s problem. The U.S. caused itself to be uncompetitive. But because the U.S. had so much influence over Japan, what it did was say, okay, you guys got to sit down. We got to change the rules of the game. And what that meant was, Japan, you got to overstimulate your economy and cause inflation. And that will make us more competitive. Not that the U.S. would change its wrong policies, but that Japan had to compensate for the U.S. policies, which Japan did. You see, they met at the Plaza Hotel in New York and signed what's called the Plaza Accords. And the whole focus of that was Japan, stimulate your economy, cause inflation, and reduce your competitiveness. That would reduce in terms of the trade deficit of the U.S. with you. Okay. So that's why, you know, was the offensive at the time in the 80s. Well, what was the offensive in the 70s under Nixon? Well, it was kind of the same thing. The U.S. policies were causing too much U.S. inflation. Policies during the 60s of the war spending on top of, you know, the Great Society spending, and the economy that was running at full capacity on top of all that. Well, inflation was accelerating in the U.S. in the late 60s. And the U.S. was becoming uncompetitive with the Europeans. And at that time, the U.S. was on a global international monetary system called the Bretton Woods Agreement, signed in 1944, which the U.S. wanted then and served its interests. But by 1971, it no longer served U.S. interests, the Bretton Woods system, because part of that system was the U.S. had to sell gold, its gold stock, because gold was pegged at $1.35 an ounce. So the Europeans could say, we don't want to hold U.S. dollars because they're depreciating because of inflation. Here, take these dollars, Nixon, and give us some of your gold. Well, Nixon didn't want to give him any more gold because we were running out of gold, you see. And so what he did was say, oh, you know, we're changing the rules of the trade game. We're deep sixing here. We're scuttling the Bretton Woods system, 1971. We're going off the $35 an ounce dollar gold standard. And that allowed U.S. goods, the dollar, to depreciate and U.S. goods to become more competitive with the European, and restored U.S. export sales for U.S. companies in Europe and in the U.S., you see. The dollar devalued as a result. Well, there's very serious consequences of that devaluation and the scuttling of Bretton Woods. I talk about it in my book, Central Bankers at the End of the Ropes, because what it meant was turn the whole show over to the central banks. And the central banks then started their decades-long policy of pumping a lot of liquidity and money into the economy, which then started by the 80s and 90s, creating these financial asset bubbles, right? And we still got them going on today. That's the consequence of central banks running the international monetary system show. Well, we talked about that a lot, but, you know, read my book if you're interested. But that Bretton Woods, in other words, to summarize, was all about Nixon and the U.S. improving the competitiveness of U.S. corporations as its global competitors got stronger and stronger, partly as a response of poor U.S. policies, you see. And then Reagan, the same thing. Global competitor, Japan, was getting stronger and stronger. That's because of bad U.S. policies was making us uncompetitive. But, you know, you don't admit your policies were bad and change. You force other people to adapt to them. And that's what Nixon and Reagan did. And that's just what Trump is trying to do now as well. Force these other trading partners to adapt to the U.S., changing the rules of the game in trade. It's what they're doing. Rearrange, redefine the rules of the game, both in terms of tariffs, right, technology transfer, quotas, and the WTO, World Trade Organization itself, right? And that's what's going on now. It's a new trade offensive, a new rejuggling of the deck, reshuffling of the deck, the trade deck here. And U.S. capitalists do that periodically when it serves their interest to do so. In other words, it's all about making U.S. corporations, particularly multinational corporations, more profitable at the expense of their capitalist competitors. Yes, that's what the state does. It defends and advances their interests vis-a-vis other countries and other capitalists, just as Congress turned around and subsidized corporate interests and investor interests with their huge tax cuts. You see, they both have that in common, tax and trade policy. They both have the same thing in common. And before that, it was the central banks subsidizing business with zero interest rates for 7 years. So we've shifted from monetary subsidization through the central bank here with the tax cuts to fiscal business investor tax cuts subsidization. And now, you know, the third element here is, well, let's make adjustments as well on the international global trade side to benefit our interests. The capitalist state is very aggressive on behalf of its vested members, you see. Very aggressive, and even more so. The trend in the 21st century, I believe, is even more intensive involvement of the capitalist state in subsidizing and ensuring the profitability of U.S. corporations more than ever before. That's the long-term trend, you see, and it's significant. You know, it's been building and going on since Reagan. This is what neoliberalism is really about. Neoliberalism is really fundamentally, in the broadest sense, about the state intervening to ensure and expand and improve the profitability of business interests, intervening unlike ever before. You know, it's neoliberalism is kind of New Deal for the capitalists. You know, like FDR's New Deal was for the workers, pretty much, households and workers, right? Well, this is a New Deal. This is an FDR on its head. This is a New Deal on its head, neoliberalism. And the whole neoliberal policy offensive beginning under Reagan, actually it started in the last years of Jimmy Clinton. Jimmy Clinton. The Freudian slip, you know, Jimmy Carter, right? Jimmy Clinton was Bill Clinton, right? Pretty much a Jimmy Carter redux. You know, this is what the state does. And you have to see neoliberalism in that context and that trend, that long-term trend of more direct intervention to ensure competition and profitability of U.S. business interests. It has a domestic element and it has a trade element. Domestically, you know, it's fiscal policy, government spending, and government tax cuts. It's a monetary policy, central bank monetary policy, interest rates, etc. And then there's a trade policy. Well, you know, we've already had the shift towards neoliberalism 2.0 under Trump achieved here on the tax fiscal side and on the monetary side. Why is the central bank raising interest rates? Because of the huge deficits from the tax cuts and defense spending coming under Trump have to somehow be financed. And the way the central bank does it is to raise interest rates to get buyers of treasury bonds so it could raise money to cover the deficit. That's why rates are rising in the U.S., short-term rates by the central bank, to fund the huge deficits coming because of the tax cuts and defense spending increases. Okay, so that's a big shift of neoliberalism 2.0. The other big shift is towards fiscal policy, tax cuts and defense spending. The third element is the shift on the trade front, you see. You got the fiscal and monetary policy locked in. Now you can take care of the trade policy and do the same thing. In other words, rewrite the rules to the benefit of U.S. corporate interests. Well, that's the historical context. And I will post an article here, Trump's Deja Vu China Trade War, which is going to be published in a journal very shortly. I will publish it on my blog. So look for it.